And welcome to the Department of Metal Antiquities,
where we remember what everyone else has forgotten.
As always, it is Nick Cameron, also of Glacier Musical, and I am joined by my good friend, the man about Leeds, Duncan. How are we doing today, buddy?
Evans, man. Yeah, I'm doing all right. Yeah, I had a band practice, still got this neuralgia nonsense, but it's getting a lot better. Did a band practice, played some new stuff. It's going well. We were putting things together for the new album. It's really nice. And I, you know, didn't have to worry about only playing guitar for half an hour or something. You know, I could just play for a couple of hours. So that's great. And then I got totally exhausted when I finished, but now I'm rejuvenated, revitalized, and ready for rock and roll. So how are you doing, Nick?
Glad to hear that. Glad to hear the neuralgia is getting better. I have had a day. I've actually had a couple of days. Last night, I was at my day job Christmas party. I got my bonus. And thankfully to that bonus, I was able to then purchase my Metallica tickets. Metallica is coming to 7 cities in North America next year. And they have chosen to come to one of the smallest.
Oh, is this where they're doing the 2 shows and you have to buy for both shows?
You don't have to buy for both. If you buy now, you have to buy for both. But it's only $92 for both shows.
Oh, that's all right. Actually, that's not bad. Yeah,
if you're willing to sit at the very top of an American football stadium.
Yeah, no.
Which I am.
Okay.
That's what I did. And then it was another $75 in fees. I don't know how those numbers work out.
I mean, I'm only going to Metallica if they bring Lou Reed back to life and they do that one. I'm pretty sure they're going to do some.
Well, this is a no repeat show, so I get to see both sets of opening bands, no repeat songs. I'm excited. I pre-ordered my album. So I'm set up for the new Metallica record and all that kind of good business. But I have a little bit of advice to ask you today.
Okay.
So we are setting up our Christmas tree because it is that time of the year. We were actually supposed to do it last week. Things happened. So we are still moving between the houses, as we've discussed many times. And I was certain the ornaments were downstairs at this house, not at the old house. My wife was certain they were at the old house. And after we could not find them this morning, she gave me an I told you so. I told you so. I told you so. And I'm like, it's not helpful. She's like, yeah, but I feel like I need to. Turns out they were here. I just couldn't find them.
Right.
So when she comes home, do I give her an I told you so, or do I just let this lie?
Oh, I see. No, man, my advice is, I think, you know, the older I get, the more I try and just let those things dissipate.
But she couldn't let it dissipate.
Yeah, no, I know. But even if the other person can't let it dissipate, I think you just got to. But I'm not saying I always take my own advice, but that is my, like, you know, that's my advice.
Fair enough.
Plus, I don't want to get in trouble with your wife, so I would say that. No.
All righty. Well, we have a special guest today, and I am going to let you do the honors of the introduction.
All right. Well, we have, very, very special guest, Mr. Henry Derek Ellis, who has done so much amazing, brilliant stuff, which I'm sure he's going to tell us about in a minute. He does a solo thing under that name, Henry Derek Ellis. Also recently released a band with Calm, I think that's how you pronounce it, fantastic record, which I reviewed for Ghost Cult. I think I'll stop talking and let the man himself come in.
Hey, Duncan, Nick, thank you guys for having me so much. Nick, great intro there. I appreciate all your support, man, the past couple years. You know, I've always liked your stuff as well. And it was really cool, like, actually getting to connect with you, you know, especially with your prior history of being like, you know, the metal guy, and then going, you know, getting to do your solo stuff. So, yeah, so this is cool, man. I mean, I always love to talk about music, obviously, and even better, you know, if we can talk about a record that's like really kind of under the radar. I don't think a lot of people were really hip to this back in the day. Or
I had never heard of this. We only discovered it last week talking about Grip Incorporated. Whenever we do these, we kind of like go through all the articles as we're doing it. And it's like, wait a minute, what? And then we fought about which one we were going to do.
That makes sense because, you know, this was like Grip Inc., from what I understand, was spawned from this particular project.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I guess Waldemere has the most writing credits on it. I mean, I can't be entirely certain about that, but I think he produced most of it.
Yeah, that's right. Well, look, I tell you what, I think we should say what record we're doing, and then we should come back and talk a bit about what you're doing, Henry, at the moment. So we are looking at a band called Voodoo Cult, and this is their debut album from 1994 called Jesus Killing Machine. And yeah, like Nick said, we just discovered this band doing a bit of research around Grip Inc. last time. And this band has had some like an incredible lineup of different people in the band at different times. Jim Martin from Faith No More, not on this record, but Chuck Schuldiner from Death is on here. Dave Lombardo from Slayer. Mila Petroza, if I'm pronouncing that right, from Creator is on here. And there's a bunch of other dudes as well. And it's all centered around a guy called Philip Bauer, who is a German songwriter who's done loads of different stuff and clearly just hasn't really done loads of metal, but just decided to go metal in the mid-90s. I love it.
This is the second album like this that we've done where an alternative guy decided, you know what I want to do? Because we did Dave Grohl's Probot, where he did an entire metal record.
True.
Although I will say that one was better than this.
Okay. Well, we'll see. Well, look, I feel like should we back up and talk about Henry and what you're doing?
Yeah, we jump forward.
Yeah, it's cool. So Henry, tell us what you do and tell us what you're doing now, because you've been in so many projects and you have so many projects ongoing. So what's going on for you now and recently and in the near future?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's no need to talk about me too much. I mean, you know, I do what I do in terms of like just making music and trying to push forward no matter what. It's not anything that you might hear, you know, in terms of like there's so many bands and artists that have to just stay relevant, right? You know, quote unquote. It's like, I don't even know what that means, because there's so much content floating around out there and everyone's getting music for free. So, unless you have this like huge PR campaign, you know, that's just gonna, you know, kick everybody's ass, it's just impossible to really have any other outlook other than, yeah, just make the music for you, do it because it matters to you and it matters to the listeners. And, you know, I've thought a lot about what I do and in different formats and obviously different genres. And, you know, I've managed to narrow it down to the things that make me happy, which is good, because sometimes it's like, oh, I'm going to do this because maybe I get this reward at the end. Maybe there's something else at the end that I can get. And I think especially as you age, or as I age, I should say, you know, you really try to make your, you know, figure out what your priorities are. And for me, it's making whatever music makes me happy at the time. I mean, I'm always changing, growing. I'm pretty moody as well. So maybe that, you know, that contributes to my madness in a sense. But I will say like the next coming year, I'm going to be working on 3 records. And it's going to be a challenge because I'll be working on those albums at around the same time. And just trying to get them done, because that's the way you got to work. You know, it's like when you get in, get the songs recorded and hopefully get them released. I mean, and I say that because it's, you know, one might think it's so easy just to throw it on Spotify or this or that, or the other, but as you probably know, I'm a hands-on like real media music person. So I still like CDs and vinyl. So that's important to me. Same. As well. So
just
it
the
is,
second one for me though.
Yeah. Right on. I mean, it's a challenge, you know, especially when you're talking about vinyl and the turnaround times now are just,
oh, insane. I know.
And the costs.
Everything. Yeah, I know. It's time and cost prohibitive at this point, which really sucks. You know, the aforementioned Metallica can't even get their next, they were a month and a half late getting their last subscription out, and they're going to be 3 months late getting the next one, the last one out, and they own their own pressing plant.
Wow.
Right. Yeah. which is like awesome. I mean, I think a lot of like Metallica fans don't know that, but I mean, obviously if there's one band in the world that's going to own their own pressing plant, it's going to be Metallica, right?
Well, you know what? If they are the absolute perfect model of how to do it, if you have $87 million.
Exactly.
Yes, yeah. They're the kings, so they can do whatever they want, right?
Correct. And you know, when you mention, you know, people getting music for free, that's absolutely true. You know, my kid listens to Spotify all day, and I don't have a Spotify account. I just buy records. I mean, I bought four this weekend. It's a real double-edged sword, because the democratization of the music industry has been great for creatives. It has been great for getting music out, but it has also been terrible. It's like that line in Almost Famous. Do you know how to get a record pressed, but do you know how to get it played? And that's where we are now, especially with the way American rock radio is. American rock radio is in absolute shambles and has been for 20 years. So it's hard to get above the din. It's hard to get people to buy the record. But on the plus side, for people like me who aren't putting their money into making music, but buying music and going to concerts, it's great for me because I can see bands that I absolutely love in very small venues. Unlike Metallica, where I'm seeing them in a 75,000 seat stadium, and I am sitting in row UU on the upper level in the back. So it is what it is.
It's still going to be great, man. You're still going to have the best time.
When I saw them last time, it was at the baseball stadium, and they played at center field, like right at the wall of center field. And we sat right above home plate in the second to last, like, tier up. We weren't all the way up. We were one tier down. The baseball stadium has like five tiers, because St. Louis is a baseball town. And it was amazing because I could see the whole stage and I could see the entire big doings going on as it was going on. So that was perfect. For Metallica, they put on a huge show. They play well. I am excited. I'm going to shut up because I'm going to not shut up about this if I don't stop.
Oh man. It's good to hear your excitement. I mean, you know, I just to know that you're, you know, like a crazy music fan. And obviously, I mean, you know, most Metallica fans are, but no, I love hearing the excitement. I mean, you know, I'm the same way, especially when it comes to a band like that, who I, you know, obviously grew up with and is still to this day one of my favorite bands. I actually love the new track a lot.
Same. And, it took a minute for me, but yeah.
I mean, I haven't liked a Metallica song since maybe Reload. And I say that, yeah, well, I haven't liked the production of the past few records. And I think that's the one thing that's just done it for me. I don't know. It just didn't seem
not
like...
to be that guy, but I will say Death Magnetic sounds 10 times better on vinyl than it did on CD, because it's not brickwalled like the CD was. And yeah. I mean, I'm going to be that guy no matter what. So I shouldn't even pretend.
I need to go back and revisit that as well as, the last one, but
revisit Saint Anger. Just leave that one in the pile. That's the only one I don't have, and I just can't bring myself.
It's interesting that you say that, because I actually just revisited that album.
That's one I'm gonna make. You know what? I'm actually gonna make Duncan listen to that. So
yeah, no, I've heard it. Yeah, I'm not sure I need to hear it again, but yeah, I've heard it.
But, maybe we shouldn't do that.
So, okay. So Henry, can you just, before we move on to the album for today, can you tell us any details about the three records you'll be working on, or is it all kind of secretive at this point in time?
No, there are no secrets. Yeah, man, of course. I'm recording. I'm actually doing pre-production with a new lineup right now for the second Calm record.
Oh, nice.
And it's going to be much more progressive, like progressive rock, progressive death metal, I guess maybe along the lines of Edge of Sanity, you know, early Catatonia.
Nice.
And, you know, there's a lot. I actually stepped up to play and I'm doing vocals on the second record.
Oh, cool.
And we have a new guitarist in the band, and he's bringing, you know, a lot of great things to the table, a lot of like really nice harmonies and I mean just incredible player. And other than that, I'm going to be recording a second studio album with a band I'm in called K-Flowers, and it's more of an alt I guess alt country California folk band. I mean, I would say Americana, but I hate what that term has become now. Now it's like it's everything from the Mumford and Sons to I don't even know. It's cringeworthy, the term is. But I play guitar in that band, and it's a lot of fun because I actually get to, you know, plug in my Telecaster and just do completely detach from songwriting and just get to play, which is something I enjoy as well. Lastly, I think right now it's just going to be an EP. I want to record a full a second full length solo album. Of course, that's under my name, Hendry Derrick Ellis, and I have all the songs written and everything. It's just a matter of recording costs and like we were saying earlier, just trying to the manufacturing, which would have to be vinyl for me. And I'm not too aggressive in terms of shopping for labels and this and that, the other, because I mean, a lot of smaller labels I think are really struggling as well. And, especially when you're talking about vinyl, and if it's anything more than a single LP, man, that it just gets so expensive. I do want to shout out to our label Beethrol out of Toronto, Canada, who released the Calm record. And they were so supportive, and they did give us a double LP, which doesn't happen for an unestablished band right out of the gate, So I got to support labels like that. There are labels like that that will really put their trust and their faith in you and go above and beyond. But they're few and far between. But anyway, I'll stop rambling. That's kind of what I have going on at the moment. It changes from week to week, it seems like.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to hear it. I mean, what I massively admire and respect about you is that you can do all the different sides, from the metal to the real folk, and it's like you kind of get it all properly. You've got all the references, you can play, you can do the singing, and it's like very few people can do that. Like, usually if a metal person does a country album, it kind of just sounds like metal with acoustic guitars, and vice versa, you know what I mean? But it's like, so yeah, people, if you don't know Henry's stuff, check out his stuff. But like, he's done so much different stuff. You can check his Wikipedia, it's all on there. So yeah, anyway, I'll stop fanboying and shall we talk about the record that we're looking at today?
Just for the record, I love Fanboy Duncan, and I want more of it.
Hey, thank you, Duncan, for the kind words, man. I really appreciate it. And to what you were saying, I don't know that anyone should be doing all these different types of things. You know what I mean? It's like, anytime I think of like someone like, David Vincent recording a country record, it's exactly what you said. It's just, I mean, it's oh my God.
You know, there's a band, you bring up David Vincent, and I haven't liked anything he's done since Covenant. So.
Really? Like no Domination?
No. I mean, the problem, the big problem with Morbid Angel for me, apart from Il Divinus, Tivanus, and Sanus, whatever the hell that stupid thing was called, that we also did on this show. P. Commando Sandoval is a great drummer, but he's like AC/DC. He has two songs in him. And so it gets real similar for me.
Those are some, like, those two, those two songs are like excellent though. And he's one of my,
oh, I agree. They're great. However,
favorite drummers.
They're not necessarily great for 45 minutes straight all the time, but that's right on, besides right the point. But before we get going, I want to say something that I can hear the sighs and feel the eye rolls already. You know that meme where they say, what's your opinion that gets everybody looking at your metal opinion that gets everybody looking at you like this? And it's the dude from Tangled with all the knives around him. For me, it's Death is Overrated. So
the band Death.
Yeah, the band, okay. Chuck Schuldiner, Overrated.
Oh, okay.
Throwing it out there now. So all right.
That's a whole other conversation right there, man. I mean,
completely agree. Completely agree. We can be
talking for the next 45 minutes about this.
I will just say this, and I will not mention his name, But I did speak to a death metal guitar player a couple of years ago who totally agreed with me. It was off the record, so I won't say his name.
All right. Well, on that controversial note, let's talk about what we were actually looking at today then. So, Voodoo Cult. So, basically, this guy, Philip Boer, he is a German songwriter. Apparently, he's had loads of stuff in the charts. I think he's written for a lot of different bands, is the impression I get. And he had his own band called Philip Boer and the Voodoo Club. I get the impression they're more kind of punk, alternative, indie type of thing. Not completely sure. I haven't heard them. But then at some point in the mid-90s, he decides to go metal and basically recruits all these metal guys to create a band called Voodoo Cult. And that's what we're looking at. And the lineup, even just on this record, like you've got so many people on. You've got the aforementioned Chuck Schuldiner. You've got Gabby Abalurach from Cro-Mags. You've got, I don't know if I pronounced that right, but anyway, you've got Valdemar Sorica, who we talked about last week, who was part of Grip Inc., produced it as well, produced this record. You've got Mike Petroza, Miller Petroza from Creator. You've got a guy called Dave Ball on bass, who actually wrote a lot of this album, but who doesn't have a Wikipedia. I'm not sure what else he's done. And then you have Dave Lombardo, of course, of Slayer and everybody else in the world on drums. So he's got the big people, the big guys in. So, yeah, what's everyone else got in terms of the background for this then?
It's absolutely amazing that we're talking about a record with members of Creator, Slayer and Death, along with an alternative guy. Because whenever we talk about this kind of time frame, I'm 46 for now. Next time we speak, it'll be a little bit older, maybe. But
okay,
it during that time, that was my high school years. Those were my formative years, and it was so much an us versus them mentality. It was metal versus punk, metal versus alternative, and you weren't allowed to like both. So the idea of this alternative guy deciding, you know what, let's do a metal record and getting three of the heaviest hitters out there to join him is mind-boggling. Should mention this is directly after Dave Lombardo was, I forget, what did we determine? Did he quit or was he fired from Slayer that last? No, he was fired from Slayer. He was fired, quit.
Yeah, it was one of those, I think, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He said, I can't play these days. They said, we're playing these days. And he said, I can't make it. They said, you're fired, I think.
That's
I
it. Remember. Yeah, yeah.
I think the last thing Lombardo did right before this record, I mean, not directly before, but I will say like the last Slayer record, which it was Seasons.
Yeah, Seasons in the Abyss, which came out in 1992. This was recorded in 93 to 94. So it's not like he was waiting around very long for anything, because that tour went to 93. So there you go.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's not a whole lot of other background about this, apart from the fact that it just seemed to disappear, really. And none of us had ever heard of this, I don't think. And
correct.
So it seems like it basically did okay in Germany. It got to number 43 in the German album chart. So I guess Philip Boer probably had, and maybe has still, more of a following in Germany. And that's where it got recognized. And maybe in the UK, US, it just wasn't really promoted, wasn't really pushed. I don't know.
In fairness, though, I should point out at this point in time, Germany was really in love with David Hasselhoff's records.
Okay, well, there you go. And it was on Motor Music release, which is a parent company, Universal Music, but a German. So I think it must have been an indie label that at some point got bought up by Universal or something like that.
Did you see all the studios it was recorded in?
Yeah, it looks Dortmund, LA, Malta, and Florida. So I don't even know whether they actually met up for this or whether they just did it remotely.
Recorded in Morrisound Studios, which is the very famous death metal studios. That is the place where they learned how Tommy Morris, I believe his name was. He was the person that was able to finally record the double bass drum. And one of the things I will say about this record is when Dave Lombardo gets going on that, he's going, and it's great, and it sounds perfect. So I would imagine his parts were probably recorded there.
Well, I think you can look at the, you know, the musicians on the record in all the different studios, and it's, you know, it's
plain. Actually, no, I take that back because Chuck Schuldiner was in Tampa. So Chuck probably recorded there, and then he probably recorded in L.A.
Lamar. Yeah, I was, of course. I was going to say it's plain to see this whole thing was just glued together. I mean, that's the impression that I get.
Which to me is completely crazy for the time. Because we're talking about
I don't know because, like, you know, it's I'm surprised this band survived the first record, and I'm surprised they have two albums, because there's so many. I mean, when you think of, like, side projects, that's what it is. It's like, this is something we're going to do on the side. This is something we're going to do for fun. Maybe, you know, it just seems like he fell into some money and wanted to, like, make a metal album. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think it's a great thing, because he's a great songwriter. I actually like a lot of his solo stuff. And I, even though I had heard of him, I was not familiar with this particular metal project, but
not only did they do two albums, but they did two tours as well.
Yeah.
Two albums, two tours. So they did it for real.
Yeah. I think it was just a situation where, you know, it was good timing and there was a little bit of money there. And you know, in the '90s, if you guys do your homework, I'm sure you can probably come up with a couple right now. There's so many guys that just had side projects, and it was
lots of them.
It's just, I mean, like Nailbomb comes to mind. It's like, even though that was like a more popular thing, it was, you know, wasn't like, it obviously wasn't Sepultura, and it wasn't really Fudge Tunnel, and it wasn't like what maybe people were expecting from them, even though it was harsh and aggressive. But I don't know. It just seems like side projects come and go, and they exist in that realm where it's like, yeah, it lasted for like maybe 5 minutes and went away, you know. Mm-hmm. But I gotta say, this album is better than a lot of side projects that I have heard. Most definitely, you know, as a debut effort.
I would agree with that. Let's quickly put a pin in this, and we'll come right back after a couple minutes.
All right.
Welcome back.
Hey, hey.
Now it's time for the track by track. We will let our guest Henry lead it off, because he is a killer guitarist.
The track called Killing Patrol. Sorry, just to explain. We've got to explain the first pun. Right, okay, sorry.
Henry. Fair enough.
All right, man. Well, Killer Patrol, you know, is a great opener. I think it's a great track. It's probably, it's definitely my top three favorite tracks on the album. I think it was a single, although I can't be. I think there was a single video for this. I can definitely hear the creator influence on this track, and I absolutely love it. And his vocals kind of lend to I dare say kind of has that vibe as well. And I really appreciate that. I'm a huge creator fan. And that was actually one of the great things about becoming familiar with this album. But yeah, I just think it's definitely in the top three. And I don't think they could have chosen a better track to open with.
And that's one of the things we talk about a lot is sequencing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so, I mean, I guess for me, I didn't know what exactly this was going to be, because the Wikipedia says it's thrash metal, and you look at who's involved, and you think, yeah, okay, all right, let's see what goes on here. So starts with some big, dark, discordant riffs, and then it kind of goes death metal-y, groovy, and then it goes a bit hardcore-y, thrashy, and I'm trying to work out what it is. And you know what? I love the vocals. I really, really like the vocals. It's almost this kind of goth rock, Einster Zende Neubarten thing. The German accent is quite strong. Snarl, this drawl. I really like it straight away. That just grabs me. Amazing energy. Great chorus. To be honest, there's a lot of industrial influence there, as far as I can tell. you've got that whole thing of like smacking the snare on every beat, clang, 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 in case you didn't know what a snare sounds like. And you still don't, because that sounds nothing like a snare. But it's like you've got this kind of ministry thing going on. Obviously, amazing drumming. Really like it. It breaks down to this like half spoken, almost poetry thing going on with the vocals. And yeah, this is cool. I feel like this isn't quite anything. It's like, I think a bit like what Henry said earlier about when you kind of free yourself up to just do what you want, like with side projects, a lot of the time that's what it is. You don't care about how many it sells. You're just doing it to get together and make some cool music. And it feels like that's what they're doing. And they're not trying to fit into anything. They're just doing some cool stuff. And yeah, I really like it. It's heavy, it's thrashy, but it's also got the punk bit and the industrial, and yeah, great.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with a lot of what was said here. I'll just say this regarding this track. It reminds me of what Klaus Meine of the Scorpions would sound like if he had gone really metal, which leads us into Metalized Kids.
There you go. Go on, Henry.
Yeah, well, I just want to say one last thing about Kelly. I want to piggyback what you were saying about the industrial influence. I mean, even though that, you know, Killer Patrol is one of the more metal songs on the record, that alternative slash industrial vibe is most definitely there. I hear a huge, huge Killing Joke influence for sure. And, you know, I mean, a lot of bands, I mean, definitely Ministry of that time, a lot of the bands of that kind of subgenre, early mid-90s. So going into track two, Metalized Kids, I mean, I think this was a single as well. Speaking of Killing Joke, this song to me sounds like the most Killing Joke-ish, if you will. And I'm not crazy about the song, to be honest, but the drums are absolutely excellent, which, you know, we've come to expect that from, you know, Mr. Lombardo. And the drums are the best part of this song for me. I don't know. How do you guys feel?
Best part of the whole record for me, but that's besides the point.
Well, okay. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely right on the drums. Just totally metronomic, but still that aggression. Like, it's like the human feel is there, but somehow it's still so metronomically on the beat as well. And that's like, not many people can do that, because this isn't all chopped up and quantized. Like, I don't think.
It's also perfectly recorded.
Yeah, true.
And they're at the right volume. I can't tell you how many new albums I've listened to over the past 20 years where I thought to myself, wow, I don't need the blast beat to drown out the vocals, guitar, and bass too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, Lombardo's old school, so he doesn't, you know, he doesn't do anything like half-assed or chopped up, or, you know, like, oh, let's record it on a click and fix it later. He's I mean, as we all know, he's not one of those guys, and that's why he's like the best of the best. He's like top 5, top 10 metal drummers, and I don't think anyone would dispute that. But that, I think that's a huge reason what he brings to this album drum wise is just, you know, obviously the kicks are incredible, the, you know, his performance, but he brings a huge rock vibe, which,
yeah,
I think he was probably just having a lot of fun with this one.
I would agree with that.
Totally agree. Yeah, I mean, I like the scuzz bass in this, and I like the fact some of it's in 10/4 time, just throwing that in there. And yeah, I like, it's not quite as strong as the first track, I agree. But yeah, I like the attitude of the vocals. For me, so much about what makes me tick with music, it's like getting to, like, is the attitude there? Does it feel real? And yeah, you know what, this does. So yeah, you know, it's still a cool track. So yeah.
It was a step down for me. And at this point in time, while listening to the album, I'm still trying to figure out what the hell I'm listening to, if I'm being perfectly honest. And I don't have a pun. So if you've got one.
Well, this is the title track. It's Jesus Killing Machine, which is, I mean, it's quite a bold statement, isn't it?
Is,
you
it
know,
killing
as an album.
Jesus, or is it Jesus killing other people? I mean, I don't.
Well,
even
I think
know where
the,
to go
do
with
you
that.
Know what the track actually? I looked at the lyrics, and it is actually about Jesus killing people. I thought it was the other way around, but no, it's actually Jesus killing people.
Oh, fair enough.
So there we go. But anyway, Henry, take it away.
Well, I think a Jesus killing machine is a crucifix. Hey-o!
All right. All right. Sorry. Well, you went there.
Oh, you know what? Like,
hey, they wear them on necklaces. I can joke about it.
I will say it's not my favorite, you know, album title, but it's definitely appropriate for, you know, a metal project, right?
It's like we did Forbidden or Headless Cross, where Tony Martin just tried to be so satanic and so evil.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that's what Sabbath does. Sabbath brings out the evil in you, I guess. Well, I don't know. You know what? The first thing that came to mind when I saw the album title, I was like, Jesus Built My Hot Rod. Like, this has a ministry feel. Like, I wonder. I think it's coincidence, but I'm a huge fan of that particular record, Psalm 69, one of the greatest records ever recorded in ministry's finest moment. You know, this to me definitely has that.
We did a ministry record. We did their new wave record.
Twitch or no?
The very first one.
I can't remember what it's called now, but the kind of goth rock one before they went, but when it was more goth pop, but we'll find it.
It was like Oingo Boingo.
Well, there was the two. There was With Sympathy. And
That's it.
I love that one too. But no, like, so Jesus Killing Machine, this song has definitely the 90s feel. It's definitely appropriate for the time. I just love the really straightforward vibe of this. It's just straightforward rock. The attitude is definitely there with the vocal, which I love as well, Duncan. But this is my favorite track of the album. And I feel like it's the most solid. And,
I completely understand why we have very different opinions on this song.
Well, I mean, I I love that era. I love the vibe. I love the huge rock spirit that Lombardo brings.
I totally get that. All I will say is, you know, there is very much like a KMFDM kind of vibe here, a ministry vibe for me. And those bands do not suit my personal taste.
I respect that, and that makes total sense, and I do respect that. But also, like, this song is probably for me the most straightforward.
It is very straightforward. But this song also is a bit emblematic of songs later that I really dislike.
Fair enough. I mean, I like this one a lot, but yeah, I was surprised by. I said the same thing, that this is kind of rock. I don't even think this is quite metal. It's like industrial-ish, but it's not quite metal. But you know what I like? It's got a real kind of dirty groove swing to it. Just that swagger with the riffs, great riffs. The snarl of the vocals, he's right there with it, meaning everything that he's saying, you know. And yeah, again, a catchy chorus. Sometimes you just got to go super simple with those choruses, just one hook that just literally, you know, hooks you in, sort of thing. Yeah, lots of big dirty power chords, and there's the first I think it's the first proper guitar solo on the record, so there's a big kind of bluesy twiddly solo. I'm not sure who plays all these solos. You guys might be able to identify better than me, because there's four guitar players on this album. But great track, really like it.
Well, you guys think this is metal that cuts. I really didn't much care for it. I thought it was poor. So you know what? It's Born Bad and Sliced.
All right. Track four. Go, Henry.
Right on. So Born Bad and
Sliced. I'm sorry. I'm trying, but they are not making it easy this week.
You know what? I don't think track three has the metal factor that you were looking for. And I can respect that for sure. But track four, I think Lombardo has a writing credit on this.
He does.
But the one thing that stood out to me the most on this song is going back to the ministry thing, dirt, you know, that era specifically. This has like I want to know who's playing guitar on this track. I mean, it might be Chuck, but it has like a a serious Mike Scascia vibe, which is, you know, the guitar player from Rigor Mortis who played on Psalm 69 and his guitar playing. I mean, he's one of my favorite guitar players, but in my opinion, made that particular Ministry album very special. But yeah, this has like that kind of picking style, and definitely the musically has that vibe for me. But yeah, I mean, obviously Lombardo's drums are just stellar. Not a bad track in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I like this one as well. I like the hypnotic repetitive riffs. Yeah, amazing drums as it builds up, and you've got the double kick and this weird syncopated, not weird, but this cool syncopated snare thing. Really inventive, inventive, but still kind of just catchy and gets straight to the point. But yeah, some interesting stuff going on. A few guitar harmonics and stuff. And just a great balance of like, it's got a techie side, but it's got that that rough punkiness as well. So yeah, and there's two solos, I believe. This is where you've got like an alternating guitar solo where it's going one guitar player in one speaker, the other in the other, and it's going between the two. And I don't know which two it is, to be honest, but it works. So yeah, good track.
One of my favorite things when we do these podcasts is Duncan is so much better about remembering the music and taking good notes, because I stop taking notes because I feel like I come off better if I don't. And then I forget things, and then he says things, and then now you're doing the same thing Duncan's doing, and you're both completely reminding me of why I didn't like that song. what this comes down to is personal taste. And that song does not remotely touch my personal taste. When Duncan talks about, I liked the repetitive guitar riffs, I hate that. I always hate that. I will forever hate that. And the vocals, not terrible, but getting on that AC/DC train for me, where
of being similar.
Yeah. And now on top of that, although we have slightly changed from German heavy metal Klaus Meine into German Rob Halford a little bit for me. And it's we're at the point of the album where I'm like, wow, do I like this? Do I like this at all? And I don't know, but I am a headbanger, and so is Albert.
Albert is a headbanger, track 5.
Again, they're making it really hard on me this week. So I'm doing my
best. The next one's gonna be fun. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna go on record to say that you're not a fan of this album. I mean, that would be.
We don't talk about that until the end.
All right. Okay. So Albert is a headbanger, apparently. This is like an oddball track, but apparently it was like a re-recorded. It was like an older song, I think, but
they did a couple of tracks from the Aboa record, which one of the 1800 dudes in the band is from that band. It could be one of them. I don't remember.
Yeah. It's one of the worst tracks on the album for me, and I don't really care for it. I mean, you want to talk about repetitive, and there's just a real cheese factor to it that doesn't appeal to me. I like the darkness, the really dark aggressive vibe of the other tracks, and this one just doesn't do it for me. It doesn't touch me in my special place, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, the next one might.
I have to agree with a lot of that. I did like a lot of this, actually. I like the guitar solo, which was like a really one of those effortlessly kind of slinky solos full of cool bends and stuff, and some great drum fills. But I guess I'm focusing on those technical instrumental aspects because, yeah, the song, yes, it's got a cheesy, silly factor that,
Look, I get it. If Duncan is focusing on the guitar solo and the technical playing, that is not a good sign for the song. And Duncan and I have been doing this so long. What are we on? We're almost 3 years of doing this now. Weekly. We did 6 months doing Instagram lives, and I know exactly what Duncan's saying when he's not saying it. What he's saying is, I can't focus on this song because it's bad.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't hate it, but I get it. It's a bit of a silly joke song in a lot of ways.
Well, see, and that's quite... that's the problem we're running into right now.
Yeah.
The first couple of songs were good. They were fun. And we talked about sequencing earlier. When you get to the end of side one, the middle of side two, that's where you start to put your soft underbelly songs. And we are smack dab in the songs where, you know, and yes, this is from Philip Boa and the Voodoo Club. So this was a re-record. And it did not need to, it may not have needed to be recorded the one time, much less the second. And you know what? I'm not going to make a pun for the next one. It's just called Hellatio.
Yeah, probably for the best. All right.
Go ahead.
Go on, Henry.
Yeah, you know, what you were saying in terms of sequencing, like in the heyday, I mean, this record came out in the, I call every album records. This
we all do, it's fine.
All the old people do. So, you know, this record came out during the heyday of CDs, and sequencing was especially important because it was so easy to skip. Skip. And then
I had a buddy, the singer in my band at this time, would not buy CDs because, and I quote, it's too easy to skip. I only buy cassettes.
Right.
So you got to listen to the whole thing.
Well, now in this digital, you know, culture that we live in, it's just it's worse than that. It's beyond that. But anyway,
until you run out,
unless you do not pay the premium price,
correct,
and you know you're forced to listen to Adele or something. So track number six, Hellatio. This sounds like a song title that would have This definitely sounds like a 90s like song title. And I don't know, weirdly.
To me, it sounds like they're trying to piss off the PMRC 12 years too late.
Okay. Well, I mean, not the most controversial song title, but.
Hellatio, fellatio. It's fellatio for the damned. Come on. If you just go a little bit there, you could really see why that would piss off Tipper Gore.
I'm not going to go that deep into it, but I will say
smarter choice than I made, so
this I think is like probably the thrashiest song on the record, right? Or one of the more has like some of the more thrash metal elements. Probably my third favorite track. I did make a note. I don't like to go above and beyond like making notes either, just because I feel like, you know, I want to like go with my gut instinct on stuff and not really dissect anything.
I'm sorry. For me, what it is, it's I listen to this while I'm doing other things purposefully. So because I know Duncan is going to carry me, because I can rely on that. For me, if a song cuts through what I'm doing and I hear it, it's a great song. If it doesn't, it's just filler noise.
Yeah, right on. I mean, I think that's, you know, that's definitely commendable. The one thing I love about Duncan is that he does focus on the positive aspects in terms of like, all right, well, maybe I didn't love this song, but this is kind of what I liked about it. And
well, Duncan's English. The English are very nice.
I don't know. Depends what nook and cranny you end up in.
Okay, let me rephrase. Duncan is from Northern England. The Northern English are very nice.
Some of us are. Yeah, well, look, I did like this. It's kind of almost a hardcore doom riff, like something that you might hear on an early Typo Negative album or something like that. And then you get into this like thrash metal goth horror thing. And I liked it. Great energy. I like the shouty vocals. There's a certain kind of caution to the wind recklessness about the feel of it, which I like. I like the it's kind of turbocharged punky thrash, but then you've got these super metronomic industrial drums and it's catchy. So yeah, great track.
You know, for me, it was, you know, it was a song that happened. It wasn't spectacularly great. It didn't make me dance, just like Death Don't Dance With Me.
All right, track seven.
Oh, my. Well, you know, for me, this is where the record really goes downhill.
Oh, completely.
And I just can't, I can't really get into this song. I will say, like, I hear like a slight Faith No More influence, but I'll say maybe early Faith No More, maybe pre-Patton. That's not necessarily.
Let's not insult Chuck Mosley here.
It's not, I love Chuck, but I mean, you know,
I know, me too.
It's not necessarily my favorite period, but
I still think it's kind of cool, but yeah, you can hear the decline in terms of quality of the songwriting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's right. This is where I started writing. This one feels like it's going on a bit too long. And I'm looking at the length and it's like 4 minutes something. It shouldn't feel like it's going on too long at 4 minutes odd. So yeah, it's fine. I just feel like it's kind of more of the, it's more of the same, but just in diminishing returns.
Look, I'm going to go ahead and do the Mighty Boosh reference that we haven't done one yet. The episode where they Vince and Howard had a terrible gig and the review was just a picture of baby sick. That's this song for me.
All right.
This song is absolutely terrible. And you know what? It's they're trying to, you know, paint us a picture for the lovely ladies. So next up we have Art Groupie.
All right.
Does not get better for me on this one.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, man. It's such a weird song. Like it's, you know, the first thing that popped into my head, which is just strange. It's like Exodus meets Stone Temple Pilots meets
Heroin.
Sisters of Mercy, which not a good mix, really. But yeah, not a great song. One of my least favorites.
Yeah, I it took me a while to work out what it was doing, what it was trying to.
I wish they had.
Again, it had the punky thing, but the rhythm was all turned inside out, and it was sort of interesting, but I wasn't quite sure. So there was some points where I thought, yeah, actually, I kind of get this. This is cool. It's going in the right direction. But again, I'm thinking this is getting too monotonous. It's going on too long. And again, it's like 4 minutes, so I shouldn't be feeling that. So yeah, not the best track.
Not only are these songs going on too long, which they are, because this is 5 minutes, 5 minutes of screaming Art Groupie, Art Groupie, Art Groupie, and other variations thereof, which is something that I just cannot stand. If you cannot come up with any lyrics, make an instrumental. But
you see, when you say it like that, it sounds really cool. That sounds like the sort of thing that I would like to listen to. But, you know.
Well, I would not like to listen to this. This, you know, we're at the point of the record for me where it has just completely fallen off the table. And, yeah. Okay, I don't have a pun for the next one. You take it over, Duncan.
It's called Blood Surfer City. I do not have that's a difficult one. So yeah, go on, Henry, tell us what you thought.
First and foremost, man, no disrespect to any Art Groupies out there, because I love them.
Agreed. It's just a bad song about them. They didn't think there's definitely not singing about Band-Aids here. It's Penny Lane was not involved.
Yes, indeed. So track number 9, Blood Surfer City. For me, this is like a weird one, because it's like, let's try to make it metal, but it's like B-52s meets. I mean, not a bad thing.
Yes, it is.
I'm a huge fan, but
it's like B-52s, but B-52s like, should not meet metal.
You know what it is? B-52s with, it's a hodgepodge of other kind of like new wave bands with kick-ass drums and distorted guitars. And it's an odd one, I got to say.
Yeah, I've put, it's almost like the Stooges gone metal. And you know what? I sort of liked it. I liked the gothic rock drawly vocals and all that. But yet again, I wrote, this is getting monotonous again. And I wasn't sure whether it's just that they're repeating themselves too much or the song. Songs are going downhill a bit, probably a bit of both. And do you know what though? I did like when it kept kicking in with the chorus and it just changes key, and then they bring in some kind of flangery guitars. I don't know, that's probably the B-52s thing you're talking about. I kind of liked it sometimes. I don't know. It was a bit all over the place, but I loved a lot of it, and then thought I couldn't work out the rest of it. And then by the end, there was too much. So there we go.
I'm at the point where I have just fallen off this record, and it is just no longer able to breach the blood-brain barrier for me. And I'm surprised Duncan hasn't found any psychedelia, because Voodoo Cult, I don't know. I got nothing.
Voodoo Cult is the next track, the penultimate track.
So they did. They almost pulled the Black Sabbath, Black Sabbath, Black Sabbath. Which seems stupid to me that you call yourself Voodoo Cult. You have a song called Voodoo Cult. And then you name the album something else. Yeah, I mean, you should have pulled the trifecta.
There you go.
I've always loved when bands, I always personally love when bands do that. You know,
I know, it's awesome.
It's like incredible. I mean, you know, but this is most definitely not up there with those albums that we're referencing, right?
New.
So, again, like this, the album is coming to a close, obviously, and you can hear it in I think this is just like a terrible song in my opinion. but musically in the drum department, it's absolutely brilliant. It's like the standout for me.
I think you've just described most of this record for me.
All right. And maybe for a lot of people out there that just only, you know, really care about the metal elements. But yeah, not the best track. But I mean, again, musically in the drum department, bravo.
Yeah, I mean, I liked a bit more than that. But yeah, I get it. Yes, it's kind of more of the same. I like the energy of it, but it's a bit forgettable. I like the attitude, I like the energy, I like the drumming, but it's just, yeah, it's not cutting through at this point. So that's exactly. That's all I've got to say, really.
It's not cutting through. And there is a lot of great stuff on this record, but the law of diminishing returns is a harsh, harsh mistress. And she took her cut this week.
Are you going to do a pun?
Well, you know what? Because she did. It's Bitchery Bay.
There we go. All right.
I feel dirty making that pun.
All right. So this is the last track on the US version. Apparently there were two bonus tracks in Japan. And that kind of makes me wonder like how well the album did in Japan. Because I mean, we were talking, you know, obviously it made the charts in Germany, which makes sense. But so yeah, total cheese ball song, some of the worst lyrics I've ever heard.
Oof. And you know, some of the worst lyrics we've ever heard. And Don't Dance with Death is on this record.
And I think I'm just going to cut in. I think when you look at, I actually looked up the lyrics because I thought the same thing. I think some of the lyrics that he's singing are not printed on the album sleeve, because I'm sure I could hear him singing stuff that is not on any of the internet pages of the lyrics. And I'm thinking, I don't know. I think it's, yeah, anyway. Sorry, carry on.
I could be wrong, but I think it also has kind of like an early Faith No More vibe lyrically for sure. But you know, with lyrics like "Where the bitches grow on trees," just that doesn't do it for me. But I don't know. I'm kind of like actually curious about those two bonus tracks at this point. You know, you got to think that they were complete throwaways, probably.
Well, the first one is called "My Game Is Dracula."
Oh, which I think is one of the other Voodoo Cult re-recorded ones.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I totally get it with the lyrics. I was really I couldn't hear everything he was saying, which is why I looked them up. And then I'm like, I'm sure he's singing stuff here that's not on the lyric sheets, which is, yeah, I mean, if you're going to sing stuff like that, either it's just bad, or you've got to be very clear that you're playing a part and you're not singing in the first person here. Like, this is a character saying that, and it's like, this is not clear. So
in the 90s, nobody thought that way.
Yeah, you know, I guess
Kurt
so.
Cobain had to explain that Rape Me was an anti-rape song. Sure. Scott Weiland had to explain that Sex Type Thing was an anti-song. Mm-hmm, so, you know, the immediate default back then was to immediately go to, this is not a character, this is real.
Yeah. And the thing is, I don't know. This guy, you know, there's probably a lot of sort of irony and references and, you know what I mean, clever stuff going on, supposedly, at least. So who knows what he meant. But yes, it comes across as bad. Absolutely. I do like the music, actually. I like at the end, it just, you know, it's kind of more of the same. Some nice riffs, some stomping industrial grooves, lots of breakdowns. And at the end, when it just builds and builds and it just gets to that point of near chaos, but it doesn't break down. They just hold it. They keep it all controlled. I like that. The energy of that lead up to the end of the record, I thought was cool, and it was kind of back on track again. So, yeah, a slight bit of a return to form, at least musically, if we just forget about the lyrics for a minute. Yeah, there we go. That's
a big ask.
Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and translate or transition, excuse me, transition into the sum up. If you don't mind, I'll just go ahead and go first. I think everybody knows where I'm at on this one. This is a record full of potential. And it's got a few really cool, really great songs, but I just don't think it was ever written for me. And I'm not going to say this is a bad record. I'm not going to say it's poorly put together. It is just not something that meets my personal tastes. So because of that, I'm going to bin it.
Fair, man. Well, look, for me, I think if this had been an EP, maybe like a 6-track EP or something like that, this would be
much better.
Absolutely brilliant. There's probably 6-ish really, really strong, great tracks. I like the style of it. I think there's a lot of stuff going on here where it's combining styles in a way that I've never quite heard like that before. And when it works, it's outstanding. So, for me, it's still a spin it because I think just about more than half of it is very good or amazing or brilliant. There's quite a lot of filler here. Towards the end, it really does go downhill and it starts to just get a little bit fatiguing. But there's enough great stuff here that I think, I think there's enough metal on it that if you're an open-minded metaler, you're going to get it. But yeah, if you want a straight up thrash metal album, like Wikipedia says thrash metal, no, it's not a straight up thrash metal album at all. I do like it. So this is a spin it for me overall. Henry?
I'm going to say, like, you know, there's a lot of middle ground there. I'm not going to be too harsh because I think it's a cool album for people who aren't specifically metalheads and that want to hear something really interesting from maybe that genre, from a maybe that time. I think, there are a lot of really cool riffs on it. I mean, as we've discussed, the drums are just absolutely outstanding. And I would say to everyone, like, check out, especially if you like this. I mean, I think his solo stuff is better. Check out his solo stuff because the guy is pretty prolific and he's done a lot of like really great stuff. I haven't heard most of it, to be perfectly honest, but the stuff I've heard, I really like. It almost reminds me of Legendary Pink Dots, which are originally
cool bands. Saw them live a few years ago.
Oh yeah, man. Great band. It kind of reminds me of another band another like post-punky new wave band called Shock Therapy. But yeah, check out his solo stuff. The guy has shit tons of albums and releases, but a lot of really great stuff, I would say.
All right. So
are you spin it or you bin it?
No,
the way it works is spin it means you'll listen to it again. Bin it means throw it away.
Right on. Dude, I would spin it time and time again, I would think, because, you know, it historically, and it's a kind of an important record if you think about it. You got Chuck, you know, you've got Lombardo, man. You've got the dude from Cro-Mags who played on, I love Alpha Omega and Near Death Experience. I mean, those two Cro-Mags records are epic for me. And of course, Creator. If you kind of put all that together and maybe, you know, if you're a little more open-minded, maybe if you're having a really good day, yeah, you might spin it. I would definitely spin it. I will say if I see it in the wild, I'm going to buy it. If it ever gets reissued, you know, yeah, absolutely.
Well, there you go. I once again have the minority opinion and I am okay with that. Does anybody else have anything final to say on this record?
No, that's it for me. That's it for me.
I have said everything I'm going to say. I have an open mind. I don't know if anybody's throwing shade at me, but the one thing, there's a couple of genres of music I just don't like. I don't like industrial.
No shade, man. No shade at all.
And I don't like techno. So just so we're clear, those are just things that they just don't work for me. They don't get through. So I will say, thank you, Duncan, as always. Thank you, Henry, for joining us. You have made this a better week than normal, and I appreciate you. We'll put all kinds of wonderful, fun links for all your good stuff down in the description of this podcast. So everybody, check it out. Definitely check out Calm. And this is the Department of Metal Antiquities. We listened in case you didn't have to.
Bye.
Cheers.